Let's move into the 90s and the IPO frenzy. You were at the heart of that from day one. Let's talk about that for a little bit and your impressions and how it all came about, and then work us up to the bubble bursting.
Well, we at Morris, Manning & Martin and the technology community in Atlanta was very fortunate in the 90s. It turned out to be a situation that a lot of the IPOs during the 90s were coming out of the software arena. And again, Atlanta has been a haven for software companies. What occurred was the venture capitalists also began to grow in the 90s. And at its height, Atlanta probably had 20, what I would characterize as viable venture capital funds. That is, they had money, they were out writing checks, they were writing Series A checks and Series B checks, and they were actively involved in the industry and in the market. Now, we all know that when we have a lot of venture funds that are actively going after companies, what's going to happen is they're going to drive valuations up. So we saw these companies grow very rapidly. We had indigenous venture funds. They were attracting other venture funds from outside the region. And we had a growth and a real growth spurt of technology companies, particularly in the software arena. Well, interestingly, those companies, many of them were able to hit a particular peak right around the late 90s when the IPO market was going crazy. And we were very fortunate at Morris Manning to actually handle more IPOs than just about any firm in the country. I still look at our conference room table and recall the number of investment bankers we had running through there to hold meetings of companies who were going public. And we were taking companies public like crazy. I think at one time we had five different companies who were in our conference room at one point or another, you know, going after preparing their prospectuses and filing their S-1s. That was a great time for the community and one of the most important times for technology software companies here, because what an IPO does more than anything else is it provides fuel for the tank. So what occurs is, you can imagine, analogy to a bus, you drive the bus up and it just swallows up gas, but you know you can drive forever. Well, these technology companies were raising 50, 75, $100 million of cash that allowed them to go off and make other acquisitions. So the key for us at that time was the hope that these companies would get funded by the venture funds, again, because we had a lot of them, and then secondarily, once they went public, take this huge stash of cash that they had and make acquisitions. Roll the clock forward 10 years, what really occurred was, unfortunately, many of those companies were not able to get to the next level. There are still some, Manhattan Associates being probably the best instance of one that made it past the hump. But it was a tough time after that. But certainly it was the go-go days of the 90s, and we've never seen anything like it. I'm not sure in our lifetime we're going to see anything like it again.
That's not necessarily a bad thing, is it?
It's not. I think what happens is, you know, we see these, the phenomenon has been described by some investors as greed and fear. And I think that was a greed period of time, and there was a lot of greed going on, people trying to take their companies public. I do recall, actually, in one instance, I was at a client's meeting. I got a call to come out of the meeting. I was a client of mine who was about $10 million in revenues, and they were growing, but I wouldn't say that they were on a meteoric climb. And the client said, "You've got to get back to Atlanta right away. I know you're in a board meeting. You got to come back. We're going to have an all-hands IPO meeting tomorrow morning, and we're going to go off and raise $150 million. And I thought, okay, you're a $10 million a year software company. You have, you know, barely reached that number, and you got investment bankers that want to take you public and raise $150 million. Wow. So I got on the next plane, came back, and, you know, went out and actually had a successful offering. But I think that was clearly a time when there was a lot of overindulgence. Right after that, we went into the fear mode, and unfortunately, the venture funds, for which we had 20 or so previously, evaporated down to about two or three, which was a big problem. The angels oftentimes in that environment were getting crushed, so the angel community dried up, and the investment banking community went through a metamorphosis and basically reduced in size. So we went from the go-go, so-called greedy times to the really sparse, you know, fearful times. Now I think it's much more of a happy medium at this point, but we will see those ebbs and flows, no doubt.
I guess from our common faith background, the teaching of humility was a good thing to have happened during that time period. I recall sitting in booth 61 at the OK Cafe talking to a young entrepreneur who looked at me in the eyes, and at that time, as you know, I was introducing a lot of people to a lot of the venture and angel community. He looked at me in the eyes and said, "Ricky, let me make sure you understand this. do not introduce me to anyone who's going to mess with my valuation because I know what my company's worth. I looked him in the eyes and said, I'm going to do you one better than that. I'm not going to introduce you to one damn soul. You are too cocky to be doing business with me or my friends. I'm sure you saw a lot of that as well.
Well, I did. And I tell you, one thing that's been so good about this community, and you and I both know this to be the case, Atlanta is a wonderful city. It's a great place for people to grow and build a company. And I'll tell you, one of the things that really makes me proud of our city, people like you, David Cummings, so many people that are out there that are willing to give of their time to entrepreneurs to help them build, make contacts, and grow relationships. I think the other element of it is, and you're right, there were a lot of folks that were, you know, frankly, very successful and unfortunately sometimes got a little too self-centered. But what we have seen, and this is what we need to see more of, is serial entrepreneurs. That is, people that have been out there, done it once, done it again, done it again. And I think the one hurdle we have to get over here in our community is that every time you do it, you're not going to be successful. The Valley is full of people that have been successful and unsuccessful. And it's just a typical arrangement out there. And I think outside of the Valley, sometimes there's a stigma that if you didn't have a successful startup, there's something wrong with you. Well, most of the people in the Valley that have had successful startups or had successful companies now, they've had a lot of failures. It's a lot like politics, Ricky. I think, you know, politicians oftentimes they lose the first couple races, but they come back up and oftentimes will find themselves in a position where they are in leadership positions down the road. So we're building that serial entrepreneurial base, but we need to be forgiving of those entrepreneurs who may not make it the first time or even the second time.